Welcome to a special edition of Why Blank Lost, which will be discussing why Lisa, the Queen of New Zealand survivor, won. I'm your host, David Bloomberg, and today I have a special guest, the Queen of International Survivor Podcasting, Shannon Gates.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for calling me a queen as well. How special is that?
Well, it seems appropriate. I mean, you cover everything there. So.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I was on Survivor New Zealand. I've spoken about it so much. I think I've spoken about it for more hours publicly than anyone on the planet, which is a bit of a strange mantle to have and something I'll probably be putting on my resume, because like I am well-versed, I think, in everything Survivor New Zealand at this point.
I'd love to know how a potential employer would see that and think about that on your resume.
Yeah, what kind of jobs am I applying for where that would be relevant? Probably none. See, but I don't feel like I've wasted my time, though. But yeah, probably not helping me in the job market.
All right. So just to allay any fears of listeners, Jessica will still be doing this podcast. She was unable to keep up with Survivor New Zealand. And, you know, she'll still be back with U.S. Survivor. And who knows, maybe before then. Right now, I'm pretty sure she's living it up in Orlando with Hearts of Reality, which even has some Australian survivors there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe next year also some of the New Zealand survivors will go.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. It's a long trip for a big party, but hey, if it's a good enough party, I guess. So anyway, as you know, regular listeners of this podcast know, we go over the rules and discuss normally why each player lost. And we didn't do that for the international seasons, but we decided that, you know, it'd be a good thing to do for the winner, Lisa. And before we even get to those rules, I just want to say that I really enjoyed the season, and I certainly hope you did too, given how much you spoke about it.
Yes, luckily it was a great season, so it was fine. Yeah.
You know, as I was watching and looking at the edit, as, you know, we all do as we're watching Survivor nowadays, I thought Lisa had a legitimate shot at winning ever since we started seeing her talk about the need to get rid of Matt. And at that point, I figured one of two things was going to happen. Either she wasn't going to be able to get rid of Matt and she would lose to him at the end, a la Laurel from Ghost Island, or she was going to succeed and probably win. I just didn't see any other alternatives, because why would they show us Lisa talking about that, then have her get rid of Matt, and then lose to someone like Tess?
Right.
You know, I just had a bad taste in my mouth even thinking about that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the Tess thing kind of came as its own storyline. Like, there was definitely the elongated Lisa versus Matt storyline, and it did kind of feel like if she could pull that off, she would win. And then the Tess thing came out of nowhere, and she had her own underdog story, which I think, you know, fooled a lot of us, or at least it was like playing into some fears that we had that it wasn't going to go, you know, RHAP's way. Yeah, in hindsight, a lot of those things that we saw, again, from the first episode of Lisa being the super fan and Tess not knowing, you know, the game very well. And then obviously the fact that her objective was to get rid of Matt, and she kept saying that she had a really good shot to win herself if she could do it. You know, looking back, that made it pretty clear that if she could do it, she would win. But you know what? When you're in the moment, you kind of like are just preparing for the worst. So I think that's why we were all a little bit on tenterhooks coming up to that finale.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I did not think that way. I thought the edit was portraying her as a zero vote finalist, which I upgraded to a one vote finalist once I realized that Adam was always voting for her if he wasn't also in the end. So, yeah, I was off by a couple votes there. But you guys were scaring me. You know, some of you were convincing me that I was wrong in my edit read here. And I was. Yeah. What did you call them that we were on?
Tenterhooks.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm always like that when I watch, like, and then I look back, like, it was fine. Like something, for example, Survivor Cambodia, I was rooting for Jeremy a lot. And when I look back in the edit, it was pretty clear, I think, that he was going to win. But when I'm there in that moment and I want him to win so badly and I'm just naturally kind of a pessimist, I'm just always really scared and thinking of the worst. So Yeah, in hindsight, I think she had it locked up. But, you know, it might not have been so clear. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Dave reveal and how that might have affected her in the jury. But I think it's really great that we're doing this podcast because Lisa's someone who obviously listened to the Strategy podcast. She even said that she would recommend that for people going on the show. So she had these rules probably in mind. She was very purposeful with it. And now we can kind of like go down the list and tick. Sorry, I have to do the pun, but we can tick off what she did within that list.
All right. Yeah, that's a perfect introduction to the rules because it's time to figure out why Lisa won. Mm-hmm. So rule number one, whether you're from the U.S. or New Zealand or South Africa or Australia, whatever, the first and most important rule is still to scheme and plot. And to me, there can be no doubt that Lisa did quite a bit of this throughout her time in the game. She came in with the knowledge of a superfan and the wisdom of how to put that knowledge to good use. She even began laying the groundwork for her plans early and followed through to the end. So, for example, I loved how Lisa explained in her interview with you that early in the game, she would always tell the truth, sometimes to her own detriment. And this was part of her plan for the long game because people would come to trust her so much that they'd never suspect when she then lied to them later.
Yeah, I love this. I think she called it disarming honesty. And I think that this comes down to her really great balance between scheming and plotting and then getting a bit into the next rule of not doing it too much. We're going to get into that obviously as well. But I think that her win largely comes down to her incredible balance of these two rules. You know, you need a deft touch. Sometimes it's a very fine line and you just go too much into rule one or into rule two. And I think the fact that she was definitely scheming and plotting, but she knew when to do it was incredible. But I mean, there can be no doubt that, I mean, the Matt vote is one of the best, as I've said, of all time. 3-2-1, take out your key ally with an idol, convinced his high school best friends to do it. That scheming and plotting to probably like the 100th degree, incredible stuff there. And she knew she had to make that move to change that perception. She knew she couldn't just get to the end without scheming and plotting. She knew she could get to the end, but then she wouldn't win. And I think the fact that she was very ready to take that risk in a way someone like a Laurel wasn't. And she knew it might be the thing that means she gets taken out, but she wasn't willing to go to the end without scheming and plotting as much as she needed to, because she knew that that would be the reason she lost in a vote.
Right. And, you know, the other thing that I think played a role here was she knew she had to avoid playing the losing game of the older woman who was nice the whole time. And so, you know, she talked about it. She laid out her game plan to us in confessionals. And anyone who has listened to RHAP knows how tricky this position can be. And I will actually discuss it a little bit more in the second rule. But I just wanted to mention it because it was part of her plan. And, you know, she laid out that whole game plan in her opening final tribal council speech, which we'll obviously get to in Appendix B. But just to jump ahead a little bit, I liked how she admitted to lying. But she also talked about how anything she discussed with people otherwise was real. So it's that balance of trying to say, yeah, I was lying to you about the game, but our personal connection was real. And, you know, she's right to say that lying is the only way to get to the end and win, despite Tess's claim to the contrary. Even more important than that, she noted that she always knew where the votes were going and she was never in danger. Although I might add, at least not till the very end to that statement. And, you know, but Tara helped quite a bit in that regard there at the end.
Yeah, well, she had a very great way of evolving her game. And I definitely want to talk about this. And it comes again a bit into rule two, because I feel like those rules are so interconnected for her. Mm-hmm. But she was very happy to stand back in the pre-merge, not really know so much about what's going on. She knew she wasn't a target. She was happy to stand back there and not kind of make herself more of a threat or get in the way of the votes there. But by the time I got to the merge, obviously she's in the majority of every post-merge vote. She knows exactly where the votes are going at all times. She's part of the Brad boot, which was a huge boot, and then obviously takes complete ownership over the Matt vote as well. So, I mean, there can be no doubt that she schemed and plotted, but it's also in very smart strategic ways where she did it when she needed to, and she hung back when she needed to as well.
Right. And the other thing is, even once she did start getting more involved, she managed to hide that fact for a good chunk of time because, you know, as Matt, the host, said in Adam's Jury Villa, that Adam only realized Lisa was pulling strings when she voted out Matt, the player. And Adam also said after being voted out that Dave was an idiot to bring Lisa to the end because he couldn't win against her, though Adam admitted he probably wouldn't vote for Lisa because he was annoyed with her. You know, just as a little side note there, I'm not sure exactly what he was annoyed at her for, other than for outplaying them. And he even later said she strategically ruined everyone's game in almost a humiliating way, which just tells me she outplayed him and the others. So,
She outplayed them in a way that's very tough for her demographic, as we've said, especially when she had such a good social game that people were very betrayed by that. Like, her social game was almost too good to the point where people felt very close to her. And Adam talked about the fact that he felt most betrayed by her in the Matt vote because he was way closer to her than, like, a Tara, for example, or definitely than a Dave, who he didn't have a great relationship with out on the island. So that makes it tough. And it's tough when your perception is someone who's just there to have fun and everyone's friend, and then she had to change it. And the fact that she was able to pull it off with only a couple of the jurors being bitter, but the majority willing to reward her, is obviously a credit to her.
Right, right. Now, I do want to take a brief tangent here and contrast Lisa being always in the know to second place finisher Tess being in the know approximately none of the time. Before the final four vote, Tess said, "I've got no idea how anything is going to go." But really, she could have said that almost any time in the post-merge, because, you know, she might as well have been playing while blindfolded, as far as, you know, I'm concerned. And even at it's funny because at the final tribal council, Matt, the host, described the jury as the seven people you voted out. But did Tess actually vote out any of them?
Aaron and Eve.
Yeah. Two of the seven people that you actually voted out. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to circle back to what I said a few minutes ago about Tess's claim that you don't have to lie to win Survivor. And I know it's been mentioned before, but I think it is important to note that what Tess said in her final tribal council speech, well, at least one of the times, was she didn't lie to her allies, which is not the same thing as never lying. And she claimed that she was going to show, or she had shown, you can get to the end without lying or scheming. I call BS, because she did both, though maybe not particularly well. And she also claimed she never flipped on her allies. Well, that's mostly because she never knew what was going on and her allies were picked off one by one. So, you know, yes, she showed you can make it to the end, but she made it to the end by winning multiple immunities and being aligned with people who were more worrisome for those actually strategizing and making the decisions, like Lisa.
Yeah, I mean, Survivor's so situational, and Tess obviously did get to the end while keeping the scheming, at least the good scheming, to a minimum, and did get 3 votes of 7. I think that, as AK pointed out in my finale recap with him, she hadn't really thought about what would have happened if she'd gotten to the end with more allies than two, and they had to turn on each other. She was lucky that she was put in, well, I mean, lucky to a degree that she was put in a position where her allies got sent to the jury to vote for her, but without her having to do that to them. And I don't think she really thought through what would have happened if her plan had actually worked and she'd got to the end with her allies and then they would have had to turn on each other. So, yeah, I mean, Survivor, there's so many elements to it. You could luck out in some immunity wins, or you earn those immunity wins. You get to the end. You haven't had to lie as much, but it's just a different way to play the game. Obviously, I like that she qualified saying that she didn't lie to her allies as much, because she definitely was lying to, like, the Keishas and the people on the bottom that she was voting out at the beginning. And then that ability, that need to lie was taken from her when she lost all power in the game and she wasn't able to rally after the Brad vote. So she didn't have to lie as much, but she also had very little control over her own game. So that's what happens when you're not scheming as much, is that you lose some of that control and it kind of becomes the elements to the game, or having to win immunities to get to the end.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's easy to say, oh, I wasn't stabbing anyone in the back, when you had no control or even idea of really what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, she would have wanted to be stabbing people in the back, probably. She would have wanted to at least be voting people off correctly with her allies if she had her way. But that's just not the way it went, not by choice, but just the way that the season happened to play out. But then to go back and be like, see, I wasn't scheming and stuff, when she would have wanted to be in control. It's, yeah, a little bit, looking back, as hindsight, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. All right. So I don't have anything more for the first rule. Did you have anything before we move on to rule number two?
No, she was very good for rule number two, so let's talk about it.
Okay, yeah. So second rule obviously discusses how players need to avoid scheming and plotting too much, as I think you mentioned earlier. And it also includes warnings against being too open with people, backstabbing too soon, etc. You've already, mentioned how Lisa did a very good job here. And, I agree. She avoided many of these potential pitfalls, though I guess a couple of jurors felt differently. But this comes back for me to the whole older woman thing that I had mentioned, and let me clarify here. I say older with big quotation marks around it, because it seems like these days older can mean anything above your 20s.
Yeah.
And actually, it goes back even further, because I remember watching Rob in his Amazon season and thinking Dina had the role of the older woman at that time. And it wasn't really until much later into the season that I realized, oh, my God, she's exactly the same age as me. And I would not have considered myself to be older back then.
Yeah, I always think about the fact that, in Panama, Suri was on the older woman tribe and Bob Dog was on the younger men tribe. And I think he was older than Suri. So, yeah, the perception for women on Survivor can be pretty tough.
Yeah. So anyway, anyone who is, quote unquote, older can be seen as the motherly figure. And, especially you're just so nice. And then when you dare to play the game, you lie, you backstab. Jurors can get irrationally mad about it, much like you described, because you're not allowed to play the game the same way that other people are, apparently. And, you mentioned, and I mentioned, both of us mentioned Adam being bitter. And it's really frustrating for me to watch. And I'm sure it's much more frustrating for those who have lived through it. So I was ecstatic to see Lisa overcome that type of situation.
Yeah. And I think it also comes down to the fact, Adam even admitted in his deep dive with me, he was like, look, I didn't know the game so well then. So obviously, for people who haven't seen as much of it and may make that more personal connection, they're going to be a little bit more bitter rather than being able to separate. I mean, obviously, Matt immediately respected Lisa's move, and he was the one who got blindsided by her the most. So it's just that different type of player. But just in general with this rule for her, I was so impressed just based on the fact that people didn't even know she even wanted to win until day 30. Even Matt thought she'd be happy to go to the end with him. He probably thought he had the numbers over her there. Brad was giving her information, working with her because he thought that she just wanted to be there for the experience. Then she votes him out with an idol in his pocket. So the way that she used this very purposely, I thought, was amazing. She went in so aware of her own archetype and how people might perceive her, and she played into it to a way where she was able to make moves behind the scenes because people just didn't see it coming, which is so impressive. And, you're not supposed to scheme and plot to when you don't need to, as I said, and you don't backstab until you absolutely need to, which is a big part of the rule. She made her move very late, final six, which was good because all the other people making big moves and taking out the big game players got cut before her. And then obviously once she made that move at final six, she did have the alliances necessary to get her to the end, which was something none of the other people making the huge moves and getting out in front were able to do. So her timing, I think, was a really brilliant aspect of her game.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say is, even when her fellow players finally realized that she had been behind some of the bigger plays, well, her allies continued to trust her, despite Adam and Tess trying to tag her as someone who did too much scheming. It was too little too late on their part. And Lisa was able to overcome it despite Adam campaigning against her both, while he was in the game and then to the jury. So it was perfect timing. I mean, we see time and time again people saying you got to make a big move, you got to make a big move, and they do it on day 10. No, you don't have to make a big move on day 10. You should barely be making any moves on day 10 unless you're absolutely, in danger. So, yeah, the timing there, you're right, was absolutely perfect.
Yeah. And I mean, look, I don't think everyone has to make a big move to get the respect of that jury. Sometimes you're just the obvious dominant player. Lisa knew she needed to make a big move because of the perception she created, which allowed her that secrecy by being just like the fan who was there for the experience and not there to win the game. So she knew she had to drastically alter that perception, which a huge move would do, and that's what she did. But I really love the way in the deep dive with me that she explained her pre-merge game, when it was like, okay, well, what did you want to happen at the Keisha boot? She was just like, I didn't care. Like, I didn't care if I right. knew. I didn't care what happened there, because I thought no one's going to be talking about this, you know, vote in 30-something days from now, you know, at the final tribal council. I'm not in danger. I've got my relationship. She knew she was a bit out of the five, but it didn't really matter because there was fodder there, and she let those people go in whatever the majority wanted to do, laid low, and then that allowed her the room to maneuver in the post-merge because no one saw it coming. So I really love the way that she played the pre-merge, but then ramped up her game as it went further on.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it is a perfect position to be in, that you make yourself so little of a threat that you don't worry anybody. And yeah, you're right. You don't have to care necessarily. So why use all that political capital to, you know, try and angle the votes a certain way if you don't need to?
Yeah, especially if you're not in danger. And if the thing is, if you have so many good relationships that you can use later that it doesn't really matter, I think that's the key. Like, if you box yourself into certain relationships that you have to keep, then obviously you have to be a big part of those votes so that it goes your way. But Lisa, she was friends with a lot of different people. She knew she had relationships she could use into the merge, so it didn't really matter who went for her, and she knew she wasn't a target. So I think that's a really good way, especially in this demographic, to play the game. I mean, it's a sad fact of Survivor, but if any woman, it doesn't even really matter the age, but when women come out, stamp the authority on the pre-merge, start becoming very loud with what they want to happen, sometimes it turns back on them. So I think just to fade into the background, make your connections in the pre-merge was really, really great. And then obviously make the moves later on when there isn't as much time to take you out because you've now become a big threat.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, interestingly, I think that's a good segue into the third rule, because it tells players they need to be flexible.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask you, how do you think she did in this regard? And I think you pretty much already answered that.
Yeah, I love the flexibility, especially in the pre-merge. One thing I think she could have been a little bit more flexible with was at the final eight, she seemed to not really want to take Matt out at that point. You know, she wanted to wait till seven. And I get it. There's like the whole even number, odd number thing. It's obviously more optimal to do it at an odd number. And she didn't want to leave that Renee, Adam, Tess contingent still in the group altogether, which is what she said in the deep dive, which I do understand, but she still would have had Dave, Eve, and Tara with her as the majority in a final seven. And I think I said at the time, look, it wouldn't have been the best time, but it would have been a good time. And sometimes you kind of have to take the shot when you have it. You know, you don't know what immunities Matt's going to win. He's vulnerable at this point. I do think that that final eight was an option for her. She could have been a little bit more flexible there. But otherwise, I just think her flexibility through the game, the way that she was able to rally and adapt in a way someone like, you know, her obvious rival in Tess wasn't able to do. You know, Tess didn't show great flexibility. Well, I mean, I think that was one of the biggest problems in Tess's game, was that once Brad left and she had to change course in some way, just from the strategy she'd had from the beginning of staying with her tight five and her key allies, she wasn't able to do that in a way that Lisa was able to adapt and be very flexible. And I think that one really good showing of her flexibility was that Lisa had wanted to go to the end with Eve and Tara, and she had to let go of Eve at the final seven because that's what Matt wanted, and she had to pander to that because she knew she was going to have to blindside him with the idol. She didn't want to put his back up. She didn't want to make him feel threatened so that he might use the idol next time. So she had to let go of a key ally there and someone she'd wanted to sit next to, which I actually think was the right move for her, and it's what enabled her to make the Matt move later. So the fact that she was able to let go of someone so important to her game and, you know, make the move that she needed to in that situation and completely change course, I think was correct. And I think a pretty good show of her flexibility in general.
Yeah, I agree with, well, everything you said. I do remember that final eight vote, thinking this would be the perfect time to get rid of Matt, you know, much like you said. And for exactly the reason, which was, you don't know what challenges he might win from here on out. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, are we going to have another situation where we have, you know, the RHAP patron saying, I need to get rid of this person, not doing it then, and ending up, you know, not winning because of it.
Yeah.
And so that was the, you know, like I said earlier in the podcast, I said it was one of two choices. Either, you know, she was going to get rid of Matt and win, or she wasn't going to be able to get rid of Matt, even though she knew she had to. And so I was still teetering on the edge there, which was going to happen. And her not doing it at that point did made me cringe a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. Look, eight, there's still a few votes left, but he was definitely an immunity threat. He ends up finding an idol, which is something she obviously couldn't foresee. But anything's possible. He's the kind of archetype that tends to find and claim idols. So I think when you have the shot and it's a fairly good opportunity, it's often a good time to take the shot. Obviously, she's able to, again, rally, be flexible to a point where she's able to pull off the move later as well. But I think it would have been fine at eight. So maybe a little bit more flexibility was needed there.
Well, I mean, I guess it does bring up the question of, could she have convinced Dave at that point?
Yeah.
And would he have stood by her even if she got other votes together?
Yeah, that is tough. I mean, obviously she's able to convince him later, but that she has the idol there as a key thing that Matt didn't tell him, and she definitely uses that to her advantage. So yeah, Dave becomes pretty critical there. She wasn't going to be convincing someone like an Adam to vote out Matt, and to use Renee as well and Tess is also very risky. So yeah, it's a tough move there for sure. It was a tough move at Final Six and she's able to pull it off. I just think she maybe should have been a little bit more open to it, but then you can't be mad at the fact that she does end up pulling it off. So,
right,
you know, what
right.
do we know? She ends up doing it. So,
yeah. Now, the other, another example of her flexibility was something she brought up in her interview with you, where she said that she had a good relationship with Tara, obviously, but she was still willing to join others in badmouthing her when it was necessary. And she said that she did it both to fit in and also, well, to, you know, put herself a step higher than Tara when, you know, in the tribe's mind.
Yeah, no, she was really good with that just in terms of her flexibility with relationships in general. In the interview, I could tell she just seemed quite open to working with whoever she needed to. She was like, yeah, I might have worked with JT. You know, when he got medevac, she was upset about it. And I just felt like she was open to what relationship she needed to. But that's, again, a credit to her social game that she had those relationships there to a point where she could maneuver and work with so many different people.
Right. All right. So I think we can move on to the fourth rule, which tells players not to let their emotions control them. Where, and, you know, I think it's pretty obvious that she did a fine, fine job here, because we saw how she struggled with the knowledge that she had to vote out Matt because she knew she couldn't beat him. Yet she had already formed this, you know, tight friendship with him. I think she even said in her interview with you that she cried quite a bit because of this decision. Am I remembering that right?
Yeah. A lot of people were crying over that, it seems.
Yeah. But you know, no matter how she felt about it, she can cry all she wants. She still followed through because she knew strategically that she had to do it in order to win the game.
Yeah. I mean, if she was emotion driven, she wouldn't have voted out her best friend. And she talked on the show in the interviews about how it would have been really fun to go to the end with Matt. He was her, you know, one of her closest relationships out there. If she wanted to do what was emotional, she would have done that. But she was a very logic driven player. And I think that she was very good at separating her emotions from that logic and doing what made her cry, which is commendable. So I think definitely a tick again. Sorry. So sorry for these tick puns. JT is going to hate me if he's listening. But yeah, I definitely think it was a tick on this rule.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, beyond that, what blows my mind is she also managed to convince others to overcome their own emotions. Of course, you know, I'm mostly talking about when she convinced Dave to turn on Matt with her. And I think you mentioned this earlier. She didn't even know, you know, that he had a much more difficult decision in that vote. She didn't know how good a job she did in convincing Dave to turn.
Yeah.
He, you know, he didn't only have to put aside a game relationship, but a friendship that had existed for years outside the game. So somehow she projected this ability to put emotions aside and got inside Dave's head too.
Yeah, that was amazing. That's why I said to her, like, at Final Tribal Council, when you heard that, you must have just been, like, applauding yourself internally. It's incredible that she was able to separate that friendship. It wasn't something that anyone else was able to do on the season.
All right, so we can move on to the fifth rule, which discusses how players have to pretend to be nice and play the social game. we've already been talking about her social game, and it will come as no surprise to anyone that I think Lisa did very well here. And, you know, I think you've said it already. That's a good part of why she lasted as long as she did. She made solid bonds with people, real bonds with people, which led to being able to make strategic moves both with and against them.
Yeah, she was described as something of the social center. I think, you know, Tara, Eve, Dave, Lisa, Matt, Adam would all have described her and all have described her as that vital ally for them. In fact, Dave even said that he was wary of her because she was too well-liked and everyone felt like they had her and that she was a very good friend for them. As well as that, we didn't see her have any major conflicts with anyone in a season that was kind of overrun by these conflicts. You know, Adam and Dave, Adam and Dylan, you know, Keisha and Tess, Tess and Tara. There were so many conflicts there. And I mean, obviously, Renee and Dave as well. So a lot of these people who made it far with her were had like actual arguments to the point where they couldn't really work with other people. Tess and Tara being two of the final four, you know, stick in my mind. And she didn't really have any of those social problems with anyone that we saw. And yeah, and just in the way that she was able to make the friend she needed to make these moves was very well done.
Yeah, you know, Nick Iadanza had asked a half-joking question for your interview with Lisa, essentially wondering how a survivor super nerd can be on the show without being hated, which I thought was a very, very good question. And I think Lisa did a great job in this regard because she allowed her fandom to be kind of an amusing part of her personality. And you know, I think you had talked about this earlier, too. She wasn't a snake going around trying to backstab people. She wasn't viewed as being too nickish. She was a nice woman trying to tick things off her survivor bucket list. And, you know, she played the role of the older, again, in quotes, mom archetype, probably better than anyone else, at least better than anyone I can remember. And it just provided such great cover for the game she was actually playing.
Yeah, and just in terms of like pretending to be nice, I think it's really interesting when I was looking at the voting confessionals. Her voting confessional for Aaron, she seems to like really not like him. She obviously doesn't know him very well, but Adam comes in at that merge and demonizes Aaron to the point where people thought he was this like really bad guy. And Lisa talks in her voting confessional about how people she trusts have said bad things about him, and she doesn't think that he's someone that she would get along with. But then Aaron ends up voting for Lisa. So he obviously, well, from what we can tell, didn't seem to realize that she was so anti him at that point. Or at least then it didn't prevent him from voting for her to win the game. So I think that's a lot of the pretending to be nice part. And, you know, she also did speak about, you know, covering for your beliefs and stuff in the podcast. And she did say that she was mostly honest about who she was as a person. Obviously, she doesn't have super controversial beliefs or something that she thought was kind of alienating for other people. But she was certainly aware about how you always have to be pandering to people, being, you know, super polite to people, people very nice, you know, not putting people offside. And that was, you know, she had the cake analogy in my deep dive with her. And I think that was very much playing on her mind, which is necessary in the social game.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember that part of her interview as well. You just don't know what could make someone mad. I mean, you know, you're not going to be out there discussing, you know, gun control, although there has been at least a couple people in Survivor who have, in U.S. Survivor, I mean, and, you know, other political things like that, because odds are there's going to be at least a couple people in your tribe who have differing views. And why would you ever want to, you know, get them mad at you? But anything, like she said, could make someone say, oh, well, I disagree with her on that. And so, yeah, that's got to be such a tightrope to walk.
Yeah. And but the fact that she was so conscious of it, I think also speaks to just her awareness in the game and how purposely she was playing.
Right. Absolutely. And you just didn't see that from some of the other players who were less familiar. The Adams, the Tesses, for just two examples.
Yeah, and I think I've spoken at length about the almost laughable perception when it came down to that Tess-Lisa thing, and we were talking about this final tribal council. It was like, Tess is a social player and Lisa is the strategic player. And I just, yeah, never, ever going to agree with that. The reason she was able to be strategic is because she was social. You can't just make people do what you want. You can't just work with people if they don't like you and want to work with you. And I, yeah, will never, ever buy the fact that she was like the strategy nerd who wasn't also the social butterfly. If any anything, she was more the social butterfly than the strategist. She only picked up, well, not picked up, but she only started really going hard with the strategy at the final six. But from the beginning, she was making friends and being like the social queen. So again, big tick on the social game. And that is the last time I will be saying tick in this podcast, I promise.
Yeah, I mean, she was definitely not your usual, for lack of a better term, RHAP game bot. You know, we've seen that before. And she used her social game to allow the strategist to come out in her, I guess, is the best way that I can say it.
Yeah, totally agree.
So, all right, moving on to rule number six. It warns players against being too much of a threat. And once again, I have to give props to Lisa for avoiding the spotlight in this regard. Certainly, she was never seen as a physical threat, which helped, and her ability to do puzzles well wasn't considered threatening enough for most of the other players to worry about. As I mentioned earlier, and you mentioned earlier, it wasn't really until she got rid of Matt that other players even realized what a strategic threat she was. And at that point, Lisa said on the show that even she didn't know why anybody trusted her. Really, by that point, I'm not sure there was a lot of choice left. She had her tight alliance, and then there were those on the outside. And even though Lisa had backstabbed others, I can't imagine Tara or Dave worried that she would vote them out in favor of keeping Adam or Tess, because she would have no reason to do that.
Yeah, I think a lot of that helped because she wasn't just making moves for the sake of them. So maybe they would have seen that she wouldn't just blindside them for no reason. But in terms of being too much of a threat in general, I mean, she was playing down, not playing down her superfan status, but definitely very purposely changing it to the point where she was like, JT is my favorite player, not Steven. Poor Steven, by the way. Like, how sad is that, that you have to be, you know, saying that you're not a fan of the more strategic side, so that people don't find you threatening. But you know what? It is relevant, because if she were to come out there and be like, I know everything about the game and I love the really shady, sneaky characters, people might have been like, well, that's scary, and voted her out. She came out there like the fan who was just there for the experience, to the point where, as I said, Brad didn't even think she cared about winning. She was just there to, like, you know, is there another word for tick? But she just wanted to tick things off her bucket list and, you know, get to the merge and get that buff. And she really played into that archetype, which was also probably partly true, but she definitely wanted to win, to the point where people were giving her information. People were just, you know, working with her, not considering her for the vote at any time, because she really played into the fact that she was just like super, super honest, again, disarmingly honest, soft, not cutthroat player. No one considered her then. And then obviously when she made her move, it was all the more surprising.
Right. Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. The way I think of it is that she used her super fandom as sort of a shield, while for others who have played, it could become like a weight tied around their necks. So everyone knew she was a super fan. Everyone knew she had a closet full of games, but nobody put that together and said, oh, she's a game playing threat because of it. Whereas, you know, someone probably should have. Wait, she plays all these games. She's a super fan of this game. Maybe something's going on here, but none of them did, because she just was so disarming about it.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to me that people really believe that she didn't care that much about winning. I mean, if she has hundreds of games in her closet, she must be like a slightly competitive person. So, like, how could she really go out there? And obviously she loves the game. It's amazing that she convinced people that she wasn't really there to have, you know, strategic success in the game and was just basically there for the experience. And I think it's interesting as well at the final four. Obviously, when she made herself a threat at the final six, very good with the late timing. But at that point, she did become threatening and Adam told everyone about it. But, you know, again, it was good because it was so late. But then even at the final four, obviously she has Tess there that she could have made as more of a threat, who they would have taken out, but she wins immunity. But even then, Tess is gunning for Dave. And whether that's on Lisa playing up his threat level and playing down her own, or just Tess's own perception, which again, we'll talk about in the jury phase, but might have been correct if Dave would have got some of those votes without the reveal. Either way, Lisa to the viewers definitely looked like the obvious choice to take out at four. And because of her relationships with Tara, and also she wasn't even really an option. It was like almost Dave or Tara, like, she really had cover there, which is very impressive considering she just made one of the best moves in Survivor history.
Well, I think for Tess, we probably have to look at what she valued in a Survivor player. And I think what she valued was probably those who could win, or in Dave's case, often come in second in challenges.
Right. No, that's true as well. And yeah, no, we're going to talk about the jury fave, but I don't think that it was completely erroneous thought to think they had to take out Dave. I think Dave, without the jury reveal, which they didn't know about, was a very big jury threat as well. But she, yeah, for us as viewers, we were definitely like, why would you not be gunning for Lisa at the final four? Like, she has such a good story. She definitely still had some friends on the jury as well. And again, not even the prime target, which was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it just speaks to that different viewpoint there, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. The seventh rule talks about getting and playing idols and advantages. So what are your thoughts on Lisa in this regard?
I think that when you are a woman with, I'm going to go back to that that whole demographic thing, but when you're a woman with idols and advantages, it is tough because usually it's the men both finding them, and in this case, as we talked about on the podcast, claiming them. And you can't really rely that they're going to carry you through the game as much as some of these like men who can go out and search for them and find multiple idols. You have to find a different way to work with idols and advantages. And for her, I think the best way to address the idol component was to maneuver around them and kind of use the confidence that they bring the user to your advantage to blindside them. You know, she blindsides two people with idols who are obviously very confident there in Brad and Matt. And I think that, you know, she obviously finds the idol with Matt, but at a point she realizes that the best way for her to use that idol that is partly hers to a degree, and Matt says he might have used it on her at some point, the best way to use that is to just let it go and blindside him and have him take it out with him in his pocket. And I think that was the best strategy for her.
Yeah, I agree. I, you know, in terms of that particular idol, I don't think there was much different that she could have done when she found it at the same time as Matt. And, you know, she mentioned that she had tried to get it, but that Matt scrambled up that tree to make sure he touched it first. And I think she mentioned in her interview with you that she thought her game was over at that point.
Yeah.
But I what I think happened was it pushed her to elevate her game even more. So not only did she vote out her tight ally, not only did she unknowingly get his high school friend to turn on him, but she did it while he had an idol in his pocket.
And she used the idol to get Dave to turn on Matt. She used that information. Right. See, the thing, the power of the idol isn't necessarily just in the fact that it can protect you. She did found the idol with him and she didn't get the idol, but she did get information that she could use against him, which was so pivotal.
Yeah. And I don't know, you know, it was interesting the way that whole thing played out with that conversation with Dave and Matt, where Dave was just grilling him and Matt was giving him nothing, 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 and then finally told him. And I was a little worried at the time that him finally telling Dave was going to be enough for Dave.
Yeah, I mean, they both have, I think, very different perceptions of that conversation. But she, the fact that she came in there with that honesty and used that to her advantage is amazing. And then obviously she did win the vote steal advantage, which turned out to be pretty pivotal for Kung Kao. It definitely was a game changer, and it forced some more uncertain allies. Like Adam in his deep dive with me talked about how he was even considering maybe going with Chinee and maybe even voting for her at the merge. But then once she won the vote steal and the numbers just completely switched to Kung Kao's favor, it definitely changed the game to give Kung Kao that dominance at the beginning of the merge. So she was pivotal there. It also allowed her to split the votes at the merge, which I'm pretty sure she was something of a pioneer in that regard as well.
All right. So we are done with the bulk of the rules. We move on to the appendices. Appendix A is about keeping your end goal in mind when you're voting, and whenever possible, voting out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. Now that goes all the way back, you know, to the beginning of the game. I think from my reading, it was pretty clear that Lisa knew when to vote out the strong, when to get rid of those outside her alliance. And like we discussed earlier, sometimes when not to care. So she joined in with her allies to get rid of strong threats early at the merge, and then turned back to focus on those who she couldn't necessarily trust. And then, of course, you know, ended up with Matt.
Yeah, I think that during the season, we were kind of like, well, should she be trying to make something work with Dylan and Keisha? Like, no, absolutely not. I think she was completely right to just let those quote unquote weaker players, weaker for the dynamic of the tribe, go in that regard and then just make the relationship she needed to make her moves later. So that was great. And even though she knew she was outside of the core five, it didn't really even matter because there was so much fodder there and she had the individual relationships that she needed. Then she obviously sticks Kung Hao strong at the swap. Again, we were like, is it time for her now to make her move? In hindsight, definitely not as well. You know, she didn't want to get out in front there so early on in the pre-merge and kind of expose herself as a game player and a threat. So I think that was fine as well. And, you know, she took out huge threats on the opposing alliance when she needed to. And then she took out huge threats within her own alliance. So she was able to take out those strong players at the right time as well.
Yeah, I think she did a great job. It is funny you mentioned, you know, should she have aligned with Dylan, for example? And, you know, something that all of us, our HAP listeners, or many of us anyway, never get all of us to agree on anything. But many of us, you know, we see several gamers, you know, the people who know the game really well, and you think, oh my gosh, it would be just such a great alliance if, you know, Lisa and Dylan and JT could all get together and have this alliance. And the problem is that's never going to happen because they all know how to play the game too well and they'll never trust each other.
Yeah, exactly. And she had her own reasons, she said, for not trusting Dylan and for not trusting JT as well and not working with them. And she went to the end with people who maybe didn't know the game as well as her. In some regards, you know, Matt was a fan and stuff. And obviously, a lot of the people at the end were great players as well. But she went there as like the super fan strategist and then was able to like make her moves as being like the sole person in that archetype by the end.
Right, right.
But I do have a gap in this rule for me a little bit. In terms of making your votes count, because I've been kind of critical of her decision to take out Tara at the final four. And we're going to talk about the jury phase, but obviously she's left here with Dave, who I think had a pretty good shot to win without the jury reveal, which is something that she couldn't account for. I think she explained it pretty well on the deep dive, basically saying it would have made her look like a monster in the eyes of the jury. You know, she kind of talks about it being beyond the game and like, I don't really care about that stuff. Nothing's really beyond the game to me. I mean, obviously beyond being like a horrific person, but keeping Tara in the game for an extra day, I don't think would have been like a horrendous thing to do, but it's more about how it makes her look to the jury. Because if she's getting to a point where they're like, okay, you were like the person who was here for the experience who turned out to be the survivor strategist who was actually pretty cutthroat. Oh, but now you've completely lost yourself and you're just an actual monster keeping Tara in the game against her will. That's a little bit problematic. The problem is she did leave Dave in the final tribal council with that Chani contingent there. That's pretty risky. It's a tough spot either way. I do think I still come down on the fact that she would have been better served with Tara next to her, even while looking a little bit too cutthroat, probably for the jury's liking, rather than having Dave there, who clearly had friends on the jury as well.
Well, and also, I think there's some risk involved in her voting for Dave, because if she votes for Dave, and didn't Tara vote for her?
Yes.
And if Tess votes for her, she's gone.
Yeah, it's kind of like a prisoner's dilemma.
Right, right. And, you know, there's also, and I know it goes back quite a ways for this, but there's been situations where someone says, vote me out, and the people don't. And I'm thinking of specifically the Amazon season.
Yes.
Where, you know, where Jenna said, vote me out. I don't feel good. I'm not. And they didn't. And then look what happened. So,
yes,
you take a little bit of a risk there when you're doing that.
Yeah, I just think it's risky sitting next to Dave. And we're definitely going to talk about this in the jury phase, because right, I think it's very important. But Dave also said in his deep dive with me that he had said to her that he wouldn't be voting for her if she voted him out. And he would be convincing Chani, so Aaron and Eve, not to vote for her either, which was a lie. He definitely would have been voting for her. She didn't mention this to me on the deep dive, but if this is canon and that if this is something that happened and factored into her decision, she did get played a little bit by Dave at that point, if that's true. So if that was, because he would have voted for her. And I think that even if she keeps Tara in the game and it's like evilly strategic, Dave obviously is still voting for her. I think Aaron would respect it and be voting for her. Matt is still voting for her. So she's got votes there that I don't know if she would have had if the Dave-Matt friendship reveal hadn't happened at Jury Villa. So I'm still coming down on the fact that I think the right move for her would have been taking Tara out at four with the knowledge that she had. Keeping Tara in the game and taking Dave out.
All right. So now we're finally at the place we've been talking about that we were going to get to, which is Appendix B and the jury phase. And it talks about, you know, how to seed the jury, what to do when you get to the end. We've already talked extensively about the most important thing she did in getting to the jury, which was voting out Matt, her biggest competition there. And obviously, it would have been great if she could have voted out Tess as well, so that Tess's buddies couldn't vote for Tess. But immunity challenge wins didn't allow that to happen. So, you know, she almost had something approaching her ideal final three. And I know, you know, her ideal final three would have included Eve and probably wouldn't have included Dave. But I think if you substitute Tara for Tess, at least she has, you know, and forgetting for the moment about the Matt Dave reveal, I think she has a fighting chance there. And she just couldn't do it because of those immunity challenges that were so geared towards Tess's body type and strengths.
Yeah, I think this does play into the Matt and Dave friendship, because this is a question I've been getting a lot since the season ended, which is like, did Lisa get lucky with the Matt and Dave reveal? In a word, yes, I think, but I think that it's more complex than that, because look, there are, I think, major arguments that Dave would have won in something of a 3-3-1 without the knowledge that he and Matt had been friends, which is, again, something Lisa couldn't account for. It's backed up in pretty much all of my deep dives. Even Lisa admits her jury awareness was kind of vague. I think maybe one of the lower points in her game, especially for someone who was so aware in the game, I kind of expected her to have more of a grasp on what the jury might have been thinking. But I think by her own admission, even after tribal council, she was kind of not really knowing where the jury would go. You know, and obviously we can't say, it's such a hypothetical, who would have won in that scenario if they didn't know about the friendship. It's completely different. You know, Dave said that Tara promised him her vote before she left. I don't know why she would lie, but if she was lying, that's two votes for Lisa with Matt. If Aaron kind of gauges that and doesn't want to split it on a 3-2-2, because we've said he was pretty strategic with the way he put his vote, maybe then he gets, you know, gives a third vote to Lisa and she has a 3-3-1 that she would need. But I would put money that Dave probably would have won without the friendship reveal. So yes, it helped her that Matt revealed the friendship, and then there was a friendship there to be revealed. The thing is, though, there's a couple of counterpoints to this. So firstly, while the friendship did benefit her, it also made her life pretty difficult. At the final six, she had to obviously separate high school best friends. That is tougher than most things we've ever seen in Survivor, and she was able to overcome that. So, yeah, benefited from the friendship, but was also up against something very tough that she managed. And also at the final seven, you know, Matt's protecting Dave there at a point where that people want Dave out, and Lisa has to go, as we've said, with what Matt wants, so as not to put his back up, so she can blindside him later, and she loses there that key final tribal council person that she wants in Eve, who I think she might have had a pretty good shot against, which I've said was the correct move and showed her flexibility. But again, very tough situation, and something that she had to give up because of the friendship. So I think that counters that a little bit in how she benefited from the friendship. And as you said, at the same time, while she got lucky with the friendship, she also got unlucky that a previous non-threatened Tess came in to sweep the last challenges. This is screw people in the past, Rob being one of them with like Jenna Maraska. It's something you can't really account for because she hasn't been this huge immunity threat before. And then she comes in and these challenges geared for her, and all the credit to her that she wins them. But it's a part of the game, but it's pretty unfortunate for Lisa when Tess is going to come in, throw up three votes in a 7-person jury because she has those friendships there, and make it a very fragile situation that Lisa wouldn't have wanted to go into with the final tribal council. You know, if Tara is there over Tess and they're able to vote Tess out at the final four, that's three votes that are freed up, and who knows how it goes. So basically, I do think she got a little bit lucky with the friendship reveal, but I also think she was unlucky in other ways that kind of balances it out to like a net neutral at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely luck involved in Survivor, you know, despite the fact that, you know, I have this whole list of rules to follow. There's obviously luck.
Appendix C is be lucky.
Right. You know, there's luck both for you and against you. And so it's hard to point to any one thing. The other thing, and I'm trying to remember if Dave addressed this, and I should remember this, but I just can't remember if he addressed it in his interview with you. He claimed when it was brought up in Final Tribal Council that, oh, yeah, I was going to mention that when Matt got up here, which I think was just a huge cover.
Did he was never going to do that if no one else knew. Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor Dave. Like, it was pretty obvious. Yeah. I was totally going to tell you. It's like, no.
Yeah, that's you know, like the guy who has lipstick on his collar and his wife notices, oh, yeah, I was going to tell you. I was in a lipstick factory. And to me, it's so difficult to try to figure out who would have gone which way, because I, you know, would Matt, if he had kept that secret, which way would his vote have gone?
I think he's always voting for Lisa, and he said that.
Yeah.
But it's more about like the Arryns, the Eves, and the Tars.
Right. And, you know, how many of the Tess votes were Tess votes as opposed to being anti-Lisa and Dave votes?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you've done a good job convincing me it would have been tight if not a, a Dave win. But I am glad that all of the information came out. And it's just interesting. It makes me wonder what would happen if, you know, it came up on a U.S. season, because there was a friendship that came up on a U.S. season and they hid it completely from the TV viewing audience. But that person was voted out very quickly.
Yeah.
It didn't go all the way to the end. You know, were the New Zealand producers forced basically to acknowledge this all because of the impact it ended up having?
Yeah, I think that Matt has said that they were like kind of like nudging him into it, but I don't think that they could have gone there and told them. That feels beyond the game in a way that they've allowed it to be a secret this whole time. It doesn't really feel fair for them to then go and take it upon themselves to, you know, leave the game to the players. And if that was a decision that Matt made, you know, that was on him. And I do think that Dave, it was bad on Dave here to a degree, and there's so many emotional aspects to it, of course. But once you vote someone out, they can take anything with them to the jury. And he trusted Matt enough to think that Matt wouldn't tell them. But you know what? He should have tried to account, or at least consider the fact that Matt, you know, could go and tell them that, and that he did have this big blackmail-y secret that he could take to the jury. And once you backstab him, that is something that he might tell the jury that could ruin your game. I don't really know what Dave could have done to counter that. As I've said, it was a very tough spot for both of the people in the friendship there, but it's a possibility. You know, once you betray someone and they're so personally offended by it, that's something that it's their prerogative, I guess, to do on the jury. It's usually not so dramatic because it's not the outside friendship, but they can go and say anything. They can go tell any lies you've told them in the game or whatever and just try to trash your game at Jury Villa. So, you know, Lisa secured that relationship with Matt. She earned his respect where Dave earned his ire, and that ended up being pretty pivotal in terms of her jury management.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Dave was in, almost a no-win situation, because if he goes to the final three with Matt, he loses. If he goes to the final three without Matt, then he's voted Matt out in all likelihood, unless somehow he could have, you know, Matt was voted out without his help somehow. I mean, that was really Dave's only hope, was that someone else blindsided Matt and Dave had nothing to do with it. That was his only hope, really, at that point.
Yeah. And Matt did talk about the fact that maybe if Dave had come in at that final tribal council and had got ahead of it and had spoken about it and prepared for it and been able to say all the things he's been saying now, which was like, it was really hard and we managed it in this way, rather than being blindsided with that information, it could have worked out better for him. I'm still not sure if he ever really would have got the votes, but you know, he was blindsided by Matt there, the way that he had blindsided Matt. So, again, that's, I guess, something that we can knock against his game as well. But a very tough situation for him, a very, very complex situation all around. But it's hard to be like, oh, well, Lisa benefited from the friendship because of the votes without saying, but also she convinced a high school friend to turn against his real life friend. Like, they're part of the same thing. So if you're going to detract from her win because she had this friendship as this extra element aiding her, you also have to then add even more points because of the way that she worked around being in a game with two friends who were helping each other and working with each other in this secret extra way throughout the game.
Right, exactly. And, you know, beyond that, I think that, well, I mentioned back in the first rule that when she got to the jury, and yeah, I know a lot of these votes were probably set already, but I do think she explained herself well, which I think was ironically helped by Adam in his last tribal council when he spelled out everything she'd done before he started lobbying against her later. And you know, so she spelled out her strategy, which was really she had to put it all out there and put it on the line. And the best Tess could do was her equivalent of mateship. And, you know, basically, you know, like we talked about, proclaiming she didn't lie. So, OK, yeah, you know, it got Tess 3 votes, or at least, I don't know, they were anti-Dave, anti-Lisa votes in most cases, I think. But luckily, you know, most of the jury recognized that Survivor is a game and not just sleepover camp, which Tess apparently thought it was.
Yeah, it's funny because the jury was so split in terms of their values. We've definitely spoken about this, but those 3 that voted for Tess, I think Tess panned really well to them. But then those other 4, I think, did value the strategy and did value that element of the game and were also just closer to Lisa and Dave. And I do feel like those 4 were going to be voting as a block. Like, I think those 4 would have rather Lisa or Dave over Tess. So it is interesting because if Dave had been getting those votes, it might have just all gone that one way. Instead, I don't think they would have been splitting it 2-2. I think it was pretty considered that they were going to be voting as a block so that Tess didn't win. So it would have been interesting to know how that would have gone without the reveal of the friendship.
Yeah, so that brings up, you know, we had been talking about that Matt was always going to vote for Lisa. If he sees it's going to be, you know, in their discussions, it's going to be 3-3-1. If he votes for Lisa, does he switch his vote?
Well, I think with the 3-3-1, I did ask him if, you know, because then he probably would have been casting a tie-breaking vote, and he definitely would have been voting for Dave over Tess. So it's more, it would have been more worrying if it was like Tara and Matt vote for Lisa, and then like the Chinese vote for Dave, and then it's like 3-2-2. But in hindsight, I'm not really sure that ever could have happened, because I think it was just more considered from that block.
All right, so we've come to the end of the rules here. Before I sum up my conclusions, do you have any other final thoughts? I mean, you've never talked about this stuff before. So,
yeah, I mean, I think going through the rules and kind of working out what Lisa had done, I was like, I came away even more impressed being like, oh, wow, she really did master so much of this. Obviously, we've talked about little gaps, so things we might have done a little bit differently. But overall, I think she was so considered with so many different things. You know, it's a juggling act, especially with, you know, scheming and plotting, not doing it too much, being flexible, having the social game, but having people not be super bitter against you. And the fact that she could do it within her archetype and, you know, play up her archetype or get in front of all these things, I think you could tell on her deep dive, everything was so considered and so logical. And I think that's why she just would manage to ace so many of these rules to get the win.
Yeah, I agree. So, you know, at the end of Survivor Ghost Island, I noted that Dominic and Wendell outplayed the competition. And now I would say the same thing about Lisa, though she obviously did it in a very different fashion. I also want to quote Jean from this past week's Survivor South Africa as she was trying to convince another player to do what she wanted them to do. And don't worry, anyone, I won't spoil anything by saying whether or not it worked or anything else about it. It's just a very good quote. She said, "Beating the best doesn't mean you have to stand up against them at the end. Beating the best means you vote them out and they're on the jury." And this is a great argument against anyone who plays Survivor and says, "I want to bring the best to the end." Now, that was clearly never a thought in Lisa's mind because she, like John, knew better. She had to get rid of Matt and ensure that she was the last major strategist left in the game. At the same time, she had one of the best, if not the best, social games of those remaining. As I said earlier, Lisa went in with a plan on how to win Survivor. She put herself in a position where she was so friendly and non-threatening early that nobody ever wanted her gone. And then they couldn't seem to wrap their minds around the fact that she had become a huge threat as the game went on, and they were all looking elsewhere. Her combination of appearing non-threatening while having a great strategic and social game kept her in the game and put her in a position where she could admit to lying and still have the majority of the jury vote for her out of respect and friendship. And that is why Lisa won.
She did well. RHAP represent.
That's right. That's right. So, speaking of RHAP represent, before we wrap up, I do want to remind everyone listening about the RHAP patron program. Anyone who's interested can head over to robhasawebsite.com/patron to help support all of the RHAP podcasts. Also, take a look at the various Patreon levels to find out what kind of perks you can get. You can join the patron Facebook groups to become part of the conversation. You can find out in advance about live events, get first access and discounts for tickets, etc. And you could even find people like, oh, I don't know, Lisa Stanger there, because she's been a patron for years. Now, I can't promise that as a patron, you'll get on Survivor and win it, but, you know, it couldn't hurt, right?
Yeah, and at least if you go on, the patrons will come out in full force for you. Like, as we've seen now, a few patrons have been playing the show, you know, going on the show and playing it. And, like, the support is real in the patron group, so it would be worth it just for that.
Right, exactly. So, additionally, Rob does special podcasts and videos just for patrons. And there are a bunch of other perks, too. So, again, check everything out at robhasawebsite.com/patron. And after you become a patron and get to the Facebook group, make sure to say hello to both of us over there. Mm-hmm. So we need a hashtag. And usually for the Why Blank One podcasts, I would just do hashtag Why Lisa One. It's clear and to the point, unless you have anything else.
Yeah, we're not doing hashtag tick. I'm never saying tick again in my entire life. So yeah, let's just go with that.
All right. So hashtag Why Lisa Won. And of course, there's the hashtag for this podcast overall, which is Why X Lost. Everyone who's listening should make sure to be ready for, well, I was going to say next season of US Survivor, but really all seasons of International. You should just do this now. Subscribe to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts at robhasapodcast.com/survivor or on your favorite podcatcher. We are all on the reality TV wrap-ups feed, which is full of International Survivor and U.S. Big Brother coverage right now. And of course, besides talking to the two of us in the patron Facebook group, you can follow Shannon on Twitter at Shannon Gates. I'm at David Bloomberg. Both of us, just our names, nothing fancy, easy to find.
I'm a simple person, simple in yeah. Twitter handle and simple as a person.
You know, as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, Shannon is the queen of International Survivor podcasting, which means...
Can I put that in my Twitter bio?
Yeah, absolutely. I would.
I'll quote
you. Yeah. It means that everyone out there will be hearing from her long before, well, maybe not long before, but before you hear from me again. So, you know, we've talked about your interviews with Lisa, Matt, Dave, and Adam. Listeners, if you haven't heard these yet, you need to right away. And also, Shannon is podcasting the season of South African Survivor, which, you know, I also mentioned, with Mike Bloom. So she moved from Bloom to Bloomberg for this one.
Yeah.
And that season will be ending soon as well. So definitely everyone should catch up on that. Shannon, have I forgotten anything?
No, but just for South Africa, we're hoping to get a lot of deep dives with this amazing cast afterwards as well. So that'll be really fun as well.
That will. I'm looking forward to that. So I think that about wraps it up.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. I needed to talk more about the season, though. I really did want to put a pin in it. Had a lot of thoughts, obviously, after doing several hours of deep dives as well, and kind of wanted to verbalize some of my thoughts on what Lisa did so well, some of the complexities with the jury and the friendship thrown in there. So it was really great to talk about it again and also talk about it with you.
Well, thank you for coming. And yeah, I that's why I always include the interviews whenever we're doing any of these podcasts, because there's so much there that, you know, we can't see on TV. So as someone who always dives deeply into these, whether they're deep dive interviews or not, it was good to have all that additional material.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to do as well. So yeah, I think this was a good way to wrap up the whole season.
All right. Well, as part of wrapping it up, I want to thank Scott St. Pierre for all his work on, well, all the Why Blank Lost podcasts. Thanks as always to Will from America for the theme song. And once again, just a special thanks to you, Shannon, for a whole season of New Zealand podcasts, and especially for joining me here today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right, everyone. Shannon, as I mentioned, will be popping up in your podcast feed more regularly than I will. But hey, you never know when I might pop up. So make sure you subscribe, and we will talk to you soon.